The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here this morning with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very, very special guest joining us, Dr. David Perlmutter. Dr. Perlmutter is a neurologist, a lecturer, an educator, and what we're going to be talking about today, Dr. Perlmutter is an author, the author of Grain Brain and Brain Maker. And all of the information can be found in those books and in the CDs and DVDs that Dr. Perlmutter has on supporting your brain through your diet, through your lifestyle. Good morning, Dr. Perlmutter. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I'm delighted to be here today.
We are so happy to have you join us today. I know that our listeners for sure have seen you on PBS discussing all of the information in your books. And there's always more to learn from you, Dr. Perlmutter.
There's always more for me to learn, too.
And so, listening to you on PBS and reading your books, I think that probably people have made a very, very dramatically beneficial switch, hopefully. They've learned some things to eliminate from their diets. They've learned some things to include in their diets. So after your years of practice as a neurologist, Dr. Perlmutter, what made you start to author these books?
Well, I would say that the biggest issue for me was probably dissatisfaction with what I was doing in life, and that is practicing mainstream neurology. And, you know, while that's really honorable and a wonderful thing to do, our success rate was really crappy, and meaning we weren't really helping a lot of people. We were basically treating symptoms. Even back in those days, 18, 20 years ago, when we would see a patient, for example, with Parkinson's disease, we did have medicines, and we still have medicines that could help the tremor and the rigidity, but we never treated the underlying problem, as is the case with things like MS, and Alzheimer's, and autism. So I felt compelled to do the best I could to research what might be the underlying mechanisms with respect to these diseases. In other words, let's try to focus on the fire and not just the smoke, which is the symptoms. And it became clear to me that there was plenty of literature out there, that researchers around the globe at our most well-respected institutions were, in fact, revealing that everything I've just mentioned were, inflammatory disorders, and that inflammation as a mechanism was the key to understanding things like Alzheimer's and autism. And even just yesterday, for example, I was on the phone with The New Yorker, a magazine, about the powerful role of inflammation underlying not only these brain disorders, but issues like diabetes and cancer and coronary artery disease, rheumatoid arthritis, all of these chronic degenerative conditions are at their very core inflammatory. And it became clear that diet was important, that diets that raised the blood sugar increased inflammation, and that in certain people who were sensitive to gluten, that was a cause of inflammation as well. And more recently, the story really became amplified as we began to understand that the gut bacteria play a pivotal role in regulating the set point, regulating how much inflammation there is in the body. And now we see that, again, researchers at our most well-respected institutions are exploring this microbiome, this collection of 100 trillion gut organisms, in terms of their role in regulating the immune system, in determining how much inflammation is in the body, how we deal with blood sugar, whether we store calories in the form of fat or we don't. And this is brand new science. I mean, 90% of all of the literature dealing with the microbiome in the peer-reviewed publications has only been published in the past 5 years. This is brand new information, and it's very, very empowering. It's very, very exciting. And truthfully, we are just at the very beginning of understanding where this may lead.
Now, Dr. Perlmutter, in your books, you made a strong point about how harmful eating grains are and how that is involved with inflammation. But how does inflammation affect the bacteria in our digestive tract?
Well, actually, you asked a question. I'm not sure it was the question you wanted to ask, but but it's actually a really good question. You asked, how does inflammation affect the bacteria? And the real lead-in to what we've been talking about is how do the bacteria affect inflammation? Now, I'm not sure if you did that on purpose or not, but it's a very cool entree because people talk about the role of bacteria in setting the stage for inflammation. But what you just mentioned, how does inflammation then feed back and actually change the gut bacteria? And it does happen, and it's actually a what we call a bidirectional event, meaning it goes both ways. So inflammation in the body further changes the array, the diversity of gut bacteria, and even more importantly, leads to breakdown of the lining of the gut, making the gut more leaky or permeable, and that further exacerbates this whole process of inflammation. You know, we talk a lot about the gut-brain connection, and not so much about the brain-gut connection. But again, this is a bi-directional. It goes paradigm. It goes both ways. Yes, events with respect to the gut and the bacteria have a huge role to play in how the brain functions, not only through the process of inflammation, but you know, understand that 90% of the so-called neurotransmitters, things like dopamine and serotonin that are so important in regulating how the brain works and mood, are actually made in the gut, not in the brain. But at the same time, to further enhance what you've just asked, we know that mood, for example, and stress and anxiety, brain-related events, have a huge effect upon the gut. When, for example, we experience chronic stress or even acute stress, our cortisol level goes up. The brain sends a signal to the adrenal glands to make this stress hormone called cortisol, and that actually changes the gut bacteria and leads to increased leakiness of the gut and sets the stage for further inflammation and may very well be the connection between acute stress or even chronic stress, or post-traumatic stress that we see in individuals and in individuals who, for example, have been involved in war, and their risk for Alzheimer's, which is actually dramatically increased. So this connectivity of the brain to the gut and the gut to the brain and the gut to the heart and the immune system and the rest of the body is just beginning to make itself known. You know, we've all grown up, Herb, you and I, in our training, it was all about the cardiovascular system being here, the digestive system is way over there, the pulmonary system is yet in another place, and who knows where the brain is, that these things were all looked upon as being disparate, separate organ systems and anything but related. And how empowering it is to recognize now that we know that things going on in the gut will affect the heart, will affect the immune system, will affect how your brain works moment to moment. And in addition, your brain's health and risk for disease or not years from now. And it all feeds back, pun very much intended, to the food choices that we make. The food choices that we feel are important are probably the most important factor in terms of regulating the gut bacteria. in terms of nurturing healthy bacteria, our microbiome, and helping us avoid what is called dysbiosis, or a situation where we've messed up the array of bacteria, the balance of bacteria in the gut, and therefore paved the way for our most feared diseases.
When you're talking, Dr. Perlmutter, about the importance of your microbiome with regard to stress, so people over the years have been given different, let's say, amino acids, theanine, GABA, things like this, to help them cope with stress. And those are going to be supportive, theoretically, about brain chemistry. However, what people need to know is when they're under stress, one of the most significantly important things that they can do for themselves is to support their gut bacteria with specific probiotics. Do you have any very individual probiotic strains that you recommend specifically for that stress cortisol situation, or should they use an overall mixture combination of beneficial bacteria?
Well, I think that, you know, what the literature demonstrates is that the issue related to mood and depression really has to do with the leakiness of the gut, that we now are embracing the notion that inflammation is a cornerstone player in depression. And oddly enough, it is now recognized that the SSRI drugs, the Prozac, Paxil, that those types of drugs that were originally thought to be effective because they allowed more serotonin to accumulate in the brain, actually are anti-inflammatory. And it may well be that their effectiveness in terms of treating depression, which I must admit isn't very significant, but nonetheless may have to do with the fact that they are anti-inflammatory. So what we're trying to do in treating depression using probiotics is heal the gut lining. And that's what the research has actually demonstrated is effective in treating depression as well. We're now actually seeing studies in peer-reviewed journals where interventional trials are being carried out using probiotics to treat depression and assessing individuals on what is called the Hopkins scale. It's an inventory that looks at markers of depression and seeing success by using probiotics as an intervention. So I'm not sure how technical one needs to be here about the specific species of bacteria, but the big ones, the big players that tend to heal the gut lining are what Lactobacillus species. One is called Lactobacillus plantarum, and then the other is Lactobacillus brevis, and two Bifidobacterium species. One is called Bifidobacterium lactis and Bifidobacterium longum. So these are a couple of really powerful species of bacteria that are known in both experimental studies and in humans to have a healing effect upon the gut lining and therefore reduce this leakiness issue that can be associated with increased inflammation. So those are the key species. Now, there are plenty of good probiotics that people can buy at the health food store that will contain Lactobacillus plantarum, Lactobacillus brevis, Bifidobacterium lactis, and Bifidobacterium longum. They're very common additions to these multiple probiotic species products that you might buy. I would say that very important to look at the label, and you know, when you read a probiotic label, oftentimes people are very impressed by the number of billion colony-forming units or CFUs that it contains. You know, you'll see a product that has 30 billion live organisms or CFUs, 50 billion, et cetera, but I think the fine print is really, really important. You want to try to find a product that does not say at the time of manufacturing, because that only means that when they made this product, which may have been a year ago, that there were that many viable organisms. It doesn't really tell you what you're going to get when you buy the product and then if it sits on your shelf for another 6 months. You really want to look at products that deliver to you over, you know, over a period of time until their expiration date, that level, that those billions and billions of organisms that you're trying to inoculate your gut using. So, you know, beyond the fact that you're taking probiotics, I think, you know, nurturing these gut bacteria with food choices, especially foods that are designed to nurture gut bacteria that have in them what are called prebiotic fiber, also, I think, a very, very important consideration for a healthy gut and a healthy body.
And that music means it's time for us to take a short break here on Natural Talk Radio. Our special guest today, Dr. David Perlmutter, author of Grain Brain, Brain Maker, and Diet for Healthy Brain. And we will be right back after these messages.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex tests and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
Current medical treatment addresses problems and symptoms when your ship of health has gone aground, hit the shoals of disease, so to speak. Now, advanced medical testing helps to guide you through the stormy seas of disease. The information from high-tech lab tests such as Doctor's Data, Spectracell, Cleveland Heart Lab, Access, Health Diagnostics Laboratory, and Genova. These advanced tests assist you and your doctor to navigate the treacherous waters of disease development. Call 754-216-2332 to find out more, or visit amtcenters.com.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very, very special guest, Dr. David Perlmutter. And I'm sure all of our listeners have seen Dr. Perlmutter with his PBS special, learning all about the importance of probiotics. And Dr. Slavin, you had a question.
Well, yeah, I'd like Dr. Perlmutter to comment on this. In a recent lecture, part of it, they showed a map of the United States, and they showed which of the states have the most obese people. And then they showed a corresponding map of the United States showing which states are using the most antibiotics, and the two correlated. And I'm pretty sure there's probably a gut relationship to that as well.
Well, there's no question. That's actually data that was developed from the CDC in 2010, and I'm certain that it holds true today. And it's an amazing comparison side by side of those two images. As fate would have it, I made a slide of that a comparison last night, not knowing you were going to ask that question today, because it's so compelling. And I think that, you know, clearly there is emerging evidence that antibiotics that have such a dramatic effect upon changing the microbiome may well be in part responsible for our incredible epidemic of overweight and obesity that we're seeing in Western cultures. And there's a wonderful book called Missing Microbes by Dr. Blazer that's been published, and Dr. Blazer at Columbia makes a wonderful argument in favor of this contention. And, you know, we even see that in experimental animals, that when we change the ratio of certain groups of bacteria called Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes, we can immediately induce obesity in a laboratory rodent animal model, even without changing the diet one bit. So that was demonstrated by Dr. Jeffrey Gordon, actually inoculating animals rodents with human bacteria from obese individuals, and immediately the animals begin to retain more calories from the given food, even though the diet hasn't changed. We recently saw a report of a woman who was hospitalized with what is called Clostridium difficile, a life-threatening illness with diarrhea that's now being treated with fecal transplant, where they actually take fecal material from a healthy person, transplant that into the colon of the person with C. diff, and it's 96% effective in curing that individual. Well, interesting enough, this woman opted for her daughter to serve as the donor of the fecal material, and because her daughter was healthy. And immediately after the transfer of the fecal material, this woman, who was very thin, gained an inordinate amount of weight. Turns out her daughter was profoundly overweight as well. So what we're saying is that the array of gut bacteria play a major role in determining whether an individual is fat or lean. So when you go to a shopping mall or the airport and you take in what is, you know, accepted as normal now in America, which is just, you know, it's really very, very compelling to see the number of people who are significantly overweight. Understand it may or may not be related to their current food choices, but rather may have to do with damage to their microbiome brought on by their original food choices, but also by their overusage of antibiotics. I mean, here in America, 70 to 75% of the antibiotics that we use are actually going into raising cattle. And the reason it goes into cattle and poultry is because it makes these animals gain a lot of fat quickly. And that raises profits. And the role of antibiotics in changing metabolism and making animals fat has been known since the late 1950s. That's when people began giving animals that we then eat antibiotics. So that one graphic that you've described, I think, tells a big, big story. And, you know, please understand that it isn't just the antibiotics that are damaging the microbiome. It's also the acid-blocking drugs, and it's also the commonly used non-steroid anti-inflammatories everybody takes when they have an ache or a pain. These are both, these classes of medicines are both associated with significant changes to the microbiome, and both are associated with a significantly increased of getting that diarrheal illness called C. diff. The reason I mention that is because that is a situation that affects 500,000 Americans each year, that kills about 30,000 Americans each year, that is induced, by and large, by giving people antibiotics, and is cured by giving them good bacteria through a fecal transplant. You know, until quite recently, C. diff was treated by giving, believe it or not, more antibiotics, and it turns out that's about 28% effective, as opposed to this technique called fecal transplantation. So that is a heck of an image, and I'm glad you brought that to our attention.
How important, Dr. Perlmutter, is it for people? They may be taking a very high quality probiotical formula, such as the one you've put formulas as you've put together, and how important is it for people to avoid gluten-containing grains? And are there any grains that are appropriate for people to use when they are seeking to maximize their gut bacteria?
I think that the gluten issue is real. I think that it is profound. I think, and it is certainly a hot button in the media and on social media especially, that, you know, there are the deniers who say that, no, gluten is great. If it wasn't for grains, we humans wouldn't have accomplished all the great things that we have. And, you know, I think that the development of agriculture 10,000 years ago was a step forward in the sense that it allowed us to have a reliable source of calories and foods that wouldn't spoil as readily, but it introduced into the human experience a group of proteins that we never evolved with, and one of those is gliadin, which makes up part of gluten, And this gliadin protein, according to research done at Harvard, is unfortunately threatening to the gut lining, leads to increased leakiness of the gut in all people, according to the research. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody who eats gluten is going to have a reaction, but it does indicate that we ought to consider gluten-containing foods on the list of the various threats to the gut lining. My mission moving forward professionally is really, strangely, preserving the gut lining. And as a neurologist, that really sounds disparate and incongruous. But the point is that the gut lining is the really powerful leverage point for virtually every degenerative disease you can think of: heart disease, diabetes, cancer, brain disease. So it's all about, you know, maintaining integrity of the gut lining, and gliadin, a protein found in gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, to mention three grains, is threatening, along with other issues in our lifestyle choices, to the gut lining. Now, there are non-gluten-containing grains, for example, rice and corn, etc. These are grains by definition. A grain is a seed of grass. And, you know, that said, whole grain, wild rice, as well as corn, are not unreasonable choices. The problem, however, arises when we begin to explore yet another hot button, and that is GMO. And by and large, the reason that we see genetic modification of the seeds, for example, corn and soy, is because it allows farmers then to spray these crops with herbicides to kill the weeds, but the corn itself, for example, is resistant. So it allows farmers around the globe to spray their crops with something called glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, and therein lies the big problem with GMO that no one really wants to talk about. I mean, people are debating GMOs. Should we know whether a product is GMO-related or not? Should it be on the label, etc.? Well, we're not so sure that GMOs are necessarily good or bad. But here's the dirty little secret, and that is the reason foods are genetically modified by and large is so that they can be doused with glyphosate, and that is the problem. According to the World Health Organization, in the spring of this year, 2015, glyphosate should now be considered a probable human carcinogen. Now, it took an awful lot for the World Health Organization, publishing in the journal The Lancet, to come out with that statement. There was a lot of pressure for them not to, but they did nonetheless. I praise them for it. But the way that glyphosate works and to do its damage in humans and other animals and damages the soil and damages our water is because it is an antibiotic. And it takes us right back to our discussion earlier in terms of changes in the gut bacteria, how they affect immunity, how they affect metabolism, how they're related to obesity. So yet again, another mechanism that leads to obesity are the changes in the microbiome, this time by eating foods that are laced with glyphosate. You know, more than 80 to 90% of the corn now in America has been treated with glyphosate, this herbicide, because this corn is genetically modified. That's the discussion that needs to be had when we have a discussion indicating the pros and cons of genetically modified food.
It's very, very interesting, because any of the studies that have gone on for any appreciable length of time with regard to GMO-contaminated foods, in animal studies, it has been shown to seriously dysregulate the chemistry of the digestive tract, particularly the gut, as well as impair, actually create inflammation all throughout the digestive system. And over the years, we are seeing more and more people complaining about a variety of different digestive disorders. And it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. Our very special guest today, Dr. David Perlmutter, and we will be right back after these messages.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex tests and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
Hi, I'm Janet Cimarelli, and I'm here to tell you about Dr. Herb Slavin, the medical director of the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill. The Institute brings the latest natural approaches to health, supported by research. We offer a full range of traditional and holistic treatments. The primary goal of the Institute of Advanced Medicine is to give you, the patient, the information you need to stay healthy and live long. So before you feel sick, before you develop symptoms, come see the team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine. You can call today, 954-748-4991, to learn all about the services offered at the Institute. Services from on-demand to chiropractic, from natural skin solutions to nutrition testing and support. 954-748-4991. You can visit drslavin.com to learn more.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very, very special guest today, Dr. David Perlmutter, author of Brainmaker, Grain Brain, and a variety of different CDs and DVDs so people can learn about all of the important information on supporting not only their brain health, but their digestive health as well. Dr. Slavin?
Yeah. Dr. Perlmutter, we've been talking about things that we all do, maybe inadvertently, that might upset our digestive tract. Are there any tests, you know, if our listeners want to know if they have an issue with the digestive tract, because maybe they're not even symptomatic of anything, are there any tests that can help identify people with these problems?
I think that there are. Matter of fact, in Brainmaker, my latest book, on page 17, I list 20 questions that I ask patients to determine if, in fact, there may be disruption of the gut bacteria that may have a role to play in their health issues. Things like, were you born by cesarean section? Do you take antibiotics more than once every couple of years? Do you have an established autoimmune condition? Are you more than 20 pounds overweight? Do you suffer from depression? These are all indicators, a test, if you will, of the likelihood of gut-related disorders. Now, in a more formal sense, there are various studies out there that can give you actual data in terms of the leakiness of the gut, which would certainly be a reflection on the degree of disruption of the gut bacteria. There's a laboratory called Cyrex, C-Y-R-E-X, and their panel number 2, oddly enough, is a really good leverageable test that marks something called LPS, for example. LPS is a marker of the leakiness of the gut and systemic inflammation. So I think that's a very handy test. I think the idea of stool analysis is intriguing, but I'm not sure yet we're in a position to understand fully how to interpret those tests because, you know, the notion of dysbiosis or disruption of the gut bacteria sort of indicates that we know then what a normal gut bacterial array is. We don't yet fully know what that means. For what is a normal array of bacteria for David Perlmutter versus Herb Slavin? We don't know that. Based upon previous illness, medications, geography, diet, et cetera, and even genetics. So I think that's a moving target, but certainly moving in the right direction. But that said, there are markers that we can look at in stool analyses, aside from the bacteria, markers, for example, like lactoferrin, markers that give us a sense as to the degree of how much the immune system has been activated, how much inflammation is taking place. And those are good markers, not just as a baseline, but really worthy of being followed over time to determine how effective your program is in terms of getting people back on their feet.
Very, very interesting and important information for our listeners. Dr. Perlmutter, I have heard you speak about the importance of how you were born. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that, about the difference between a vaginal delivery and a cesarean section?
I'd be delighted to. You know, it at first blush, it may seem that we're going to have a real tough time connecting those dots. I mean, here we are having discussion about the gut and leakiness and Alzheimer's and ADHD, autism, you name it. And now you've asked me a question about how a person was born. Well, you'll recall when Dr. Slavin just asked me about how do you know if the gut's disrupted, the first answer, the first response was how a person was born. Because it is at that moment when the baby is passing through mother's birth canal that that baby is absolutely showered, inoculated with bacteria that will form the basis of his or her microbiome. That stuff in the birth canal, not only the birth canal, but on what can I say, from another canal in the neighborhood, actually provides a lot of bacteria that's good for that child's immune system. Those bacteria are get into the kid's nose, into his mouth, and form the original culture for his or her microbiome that allow that child's immune system to develop appropriately, that heals his or her very, very leaky gut, which is characteristic of newborns, provides the right enzymes for that child to then break down mother's milk, allows that child to use galactosaccharides, a complex carbohydrate found in mother's milk, as a prebiotic to nurture his gut bacteria. And therefore, if a child is deprived of that experience, one might expect that there would be an increased risk for inflammatory and immune-related disorders later in life. And in fact, that is the case. The risk of autism in kids born by C-section is as high as doubled. ADHD risk is tripled. Becoming obese as an adult in kids born by C-section is increased by 50%. And there's about a 70% increased risk of autoimmune diabetes and an 80% increased risk of celiac disease. So we see that that event, how you were born, imprints upon that child either positively or negatively. And that this transfer of bacterial information and their genetic information at the time of that event, being born, plays a major role in the development of our immune system. Now, this, what we call horizontal transfer of information, takes place in all mammals, in birds, in insects, in reptiles, in clams, and even in sponges living in the ocean. So we're talking about a mechanism for transferring genetic information to the offspring that has been present for hundreds of millions of years. So we shouldn't take this event, being born by how you're born, lightly in terms of the decision. You know, this is how children are born. A third of kids born in America are born by C-section. And I think that the discussion with the obstetrician that takes place ahead of time on whether or not to choose a C-section needs to go much further than how big is my scar going to be and how soon will I be able to come home? We need to have a discussion with parents-to-be about the effect of this event long-term in terms of your child's immune system and risk for various situations.
It's very, very interesting to me, that whole concept of how you were born, and potentially some research could inform us on the connection between that natural inoculation with beneficial bacteria and the incidence of ADHD, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder. The question that I'm thinking about, Dr. Perlmutter, is the relationship to allergic reactions to the environment and to food. Is there any research about the presence of beneficial bacteria in sufficient colonies in your gut and the prevalence of allergic reactions in people?
Well, as a matter of fact, there is really a vast amount of that research that is published. And, you know, it dates back several years ago to the animal research in which it was noted that animals without gut bacteria, what are called germ-free mice, actually have dramatically higher levels of what is called IgE. And this is a protein, what we call an immunoglobulin, that helps to mediate allergic responses that is generally quite low. We see higher levels of IgE in humans who are suffering from allergy, from immune dysfunction, and a certain immune-related disease called Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. But that said, in the laboratory situation, when animals are deprived of a microbiome, two things are noted. Number one, dramatically higher levels of IgE. And number two, much higher levels of the cells that mediate what is called anaphylaxis. And that is this sudden response to an allergen that, you know, is the reason people go around carrying EpiPens. And if they're peanut allergy prone and exposed to a peanut, they can die. So what we're seeing is then the gut bacteria play a role in informing and in educating the immune system, in maturing the immune system and regulating the immune system. And it is now thought by many researchers that the reason we're seeing such an increased incidence of allergic disease in children, things like asthma, for example, and atopic disease, skin issues, really squarely is focused on the changes in the gut bacteria, not only method of birth, but this profound overusage of antibiotics in children that is absolutely challenging their gut bacteria. I mean, antibiotics are the most common drug used in children up until the age of 10 years, and when we realize that 4 out of 5 Americans takes an antibiotic every single year, we realize that what we're doing, aside from creating superbugs, is we're dramatically and permanently, I might add, changing people's microbiomes and paving the way for problems with immunity, increased inflammation, and, frankly, increased weight gain. So it's what you asked is absolutely right on target. There's plenty of research that indicates that the focal point for this increase in allergic issues with children is now thought to be the microbiome. One interesting report that was just published about 6 months ago demonstrated that just giving kids fiber, not even probiotics, just giving them fiber had a dramatic effect in terms of reducing symptoms of asthma. And what does fiber do? Fiber nurtures the gut bacteria, the probiotics that you have living within you. Who would have thought that fiber, which we would consider, well, it's good, it helps you have a normal bowel movement, is going to have an effect in the lungs, in the immune reactivity of the lungs. And yet, that's the kind of science that we're starting to see.
That prebiotic fiber product is so easy to use, very, very easily added to any number of different foods and to people's smoothies in the morning. I just want to let our listeners know, if they're interested in finding out a little bit more about Dr. Perlmutter's work, about the book he's authored, you can find him at Dr. Perlmutter, P-E-R-L-M-U-T-T-E-R, drperlmutter.com. And here on Natural Doc Radio, it's time for us to take a short break. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herbert Slavin, as well as our very special guest, Dr. David Perlmutter. We'll be right back.
Have you ever heard of someone going to see the doctor for a checkup or a sore throat or some common complaint, and in that visit they were diagnosed with a much more serious issue? The story I remember is the one about someone taking blood tests before cosmetic surgery, and those blood tests saved the life of the patient by discovering colon cancer. So don't be surprised. Come to Advanced Medical Testing for comprehensive testing to assure wellness. Call 754-216-2332 to schedule an appointment and get the information you need about advanced medical testing, or visit amtcenters.com. That's 754-216-2332. Or amtcenters.com.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via phone, Skype, or email, with the convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., right here on this station.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio, and I'm Janet Cimarelli, here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very special guest, Dr. David Perlmutter. Dr. Slavin?
Thank you, Janet. We mentioned the impact of genetically modified organisms on our digestive tract. I was wondering, Dr. Perlmutter, do you have any comments with regard to vaccinations and the digestive tract?
Also, a wonderful question. And I think, you know, when we look at the research, the animal research, that demonstrates, for example, that the benefits of immunization, and in fact there are benefits, really only happen when there's a healthy gut microbiome. That in laboratory animals that don't have a microbiome, the germ-free animals, that the immunizations really basically don't work. So, you know, there's a lot going on with this crosstalk between the gut bacteria and the immune system, and in this case, that is involved with the way that the immune system then learns from when it is immunized, when it's exposed to a vaccine. So with that understanding that there is this incredible interaction, we begin to understand that the health of the microbiome may very well be an integral player in terms of not only the upsides of immunizations, but the downsides as well. And that said, you know, there's this debate as to whether immunizations are related to autism or not. There have been various people in the limelight who have been mischaracterized because of their perhaps overzealous sense or public appearance. That in terms of chastising immunizations as being directly causal as they relate to autism. I would say that in my practice, what I've seen is that, you know, I've seen and heard the story about my child was totally well until he or she received his immunization at whatever it is, 12 months, 18 months, and suddenly regressed. So many times that it seems quite clear there's a relationship. And yet, I'm not going to say that the immunization directly caused it, but I think that the changes in the gut bacteria interplay with the immunization to set the stage for issues, significant issues. And what we understand, for example, with autism is autism is primarily not a brain disorder. It is a gut-related disorder. I had the opportunity this past weekend chair a roundtable discussion at the American College of Nutrition in Orlando meeting, where we actually discussed autism and the role of the gut. And, you know, this is not going to turn out to be news for any parents dealing with an autistic child. They all know that the gut is involved. It's probably the first thing they recognize, well before the speech delay and the mannerisms and the lack of socialization, is that their child had issues related to digestion, which are an indication of changes in the gut bacteria. We also understand now that there are, in fact, demonstrable changes in the gut bacteria. You can fingerprint, basically, that bacteria in the gut and correlate that to autism. There are overgrowth of certain species of bacteria, like Clostridium histolyticum, for example, that are seen much more commonly in autism as compared to controls. And we know that there that the gut plays a huge role in changing what goes on in the brain by its role not only in neurotransmitters but also something else called short-chain fatty acids. Now, interesting to note that the University of Arizona has just completed recruiting a large number of autistic children to do fecal transplantation as a proposed treatment. For autism, and they're going to measure the outcome. And I think it's going to be very, very enlightening because I think the kids are going to get significantly better. And why do I say that? Because I've had several patients who've been treated in this way. In fact, one child who underwent fecal transplantation because of his autism, video of him is actually on my website. His mother wanted me to post that. So we're just beginning to understand this interplay then between the gut bacteria and the immune system, and how that relates to immunization, I think, is very much going to be an unfolding story.
Dr. Perlmutter, before we run out of time today, I just want to go back to what your recommendations would be to the mothers who have had children by cesarean section to reestablish a healthy microbiome.
Well, it's a very tough call. I think first and foremost, mom and dad should make sure to limit antibiotics moving forward. Breastfeeding in that situation is absolutely mandatory. And as I described in BrainMaker, a research from Maria Bello Dominguez at NYU, or Dominguez Bello rather, is looking at the idea of actually putting a sponge in the birth canal prior to the cesarean section, extracting it, keeping it moist and warm so it's, the bacteria are alive, and then after the baby is born, putting that sponge through over the baby's nose into its mouth to inoculate that baby with mother's bacteria. So we're just beginning to gain some understanding about that, what that might look like. We're just at the very, very early stages of understanding that this needs to be done. And further, how to go about it.
And I guess a follow-up of that would be some of the reports about the use of all these hand sanitizers and keeping us so germ-free really may not be a good idea.
I agree with you. I think that we as Americans and pretty much in Western cultures in general are really fixated on hygiene. And, I think it. You certainly need to wash your hands when you come out of the bathroom, but I think that our obsession with hand sanitizers and antibiotics is way overdone. In 1986, Dr. Strachan proposed what is called the hygiene hypothesis, and even back then began realizing that our over obsession with bugs and bacteria is related to immune-related issues that are so common now, for example, in children. We've always been exposed to bugs. We've always eaten dirt, played in the dirt throughout our 1.8 million years as hominids. I'm certainly not suggesting that we should all go out and eat dirt, but this incredible obsession with cleanliness is building a microbiome and therefore an immune system that is highly dysfunctional. We need to challenge our gut with a variety of bacteria. I for one, as crazy as it sounds, when I get our vegetables from the organic market, I don't wash them. There's a little soil on them, and I eat it. And, I'm thinking that's a good idea. I take a very aggressive prebiotic fiber that's made from acacia gum that you buy at the health food store to help nurture my gut bacteria. And I think this is, we leverage this new information in a way that hopefully is going to give us some real payoff in terms of health.
So important, all of this information and the idea that people need to learn about not only supplementing with beneficial bacteria, but consuming on occasion fermented foods using Dr. Perlmutter's prebiotic fibers. And there is so much information supporting these ideas and possibly for people to consider when they're under stress that goes beyond the normal everyday stresses. They might think about using even higher doses or a variety of different approaches to maintain the beneficial bacteria in their gut. We are exposed on a daily basis to foods that are contaminated with antibiotics. So our commercial poultry, our commercial beef, the dairy foods that contain potentially the bovine growth hormone as well as the antibiotics. There's a very, very important negative impact on the bacteria we find in our guts. And just as a reminder to our listeners, if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about BrainMaker and GrainBrain, you can go to drperlmutter.com. drperlmutter.com. And Dr. Perlmutter, I can't thank you enough for this very comprehensive hour of information that we've spent with you. And I think that our listeners most likely have really benefited from all of the information you've had to share.
Well, I sure appreciate the opportunity to be here today and look forward to doing it again.
To our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Zimarelli. I've been here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very special guest, Dr. David Perlmutter. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.